Hello again, and welcome to the newsletter from GaiaSpora.org, offering Gnostic intel and Sophianic insight on events and issues of today. This is issue 3, presented by your friendly homegrown Telestis, John Lash. The date is 21 October 2014, and the title of this issue is Breaking the Illusions of Power. Let me start out this edition by noting that when I came up with this title, Breaking the Illusions of Power, I had in mind a line that you can find somewhere in the later books of Carlos Castaneda, probably maybe in Magical Passes. There is a place where Don Juan epitomizes the meaning of the term sorcery. You know, I use this term sorcery. I prefer this term to magic, which is a kind of fairy tale term in the territory of Harry Potter. I prefer the term sorcery, although certain people teaching on the internet today, such as Michael Tsarian, might wish to convince you that sorcery is something evil and bad, a no-no, don't go there, and magic is something good. Well, you could make a case for that distinction, but if that were to be argued by Michael Tsarian or anyone else, then I would have to ask them to show me and demonstrate the productions of magic that they can achieve, by contrast to the productions of sorcery. So, it was striking that somewhere in the last couple of books of Castaneda, after the many years of apprenticeship from the Yaqui shaman, Carlos finally got a succinct definition of sorcery. Namely, breaking the parameters of perception. That is how Don Juan defined it. Sorcery is breaking the parameters of perception. Well, you know, I've often explained that the word sorcery comes from an ancient root, sor, S-O-R-S, which is found in the French verb sortir, meaning to leave or to depart. And I have suggested, hate to use that language, it's very manipulative, I have proposed that on the basis of its etymology, sorcery means the practice by which you depart from the ordinary world. And so sortir, depart, or leave is the applicable action within sorcery. Consistent with what Don Juan said, sorcery is the practice of breaking the parameters of perception. Since those parameters of perception, conditioned thinking, conditioned emotional reaction, and all other forms of conditioning, mental and psychological conditioning, and so forth and so on, since those parameters of conditioning keep you in a certain mindset, they create the world that you inhabit. They create your reality. You do not create your own reality. What creates your reality is the entrainment of the parameters of your conditioned perception of what is real. Okay? So if you enter the practice of sorcery in a sober and authentic manner, mind you, then you reach the point where you break down and break through the parameters of perception. And then what happens is that you enter another world, which is contingent with the world of the normal and conventional mindset, and you approach more deeply into the territory of the non-ordinary and the supernatural, the Nahual. So, I've been contemplating that little snippet of teaching from the wise and wily and wacky old Yaqui sorcerer as I put the title on this edition of the newsletter, or newsletter. Now, what is the parallel between breaking the parameters of perception and breaking the illusions of power? Well, I hope by the end of this, I don't hope nothing. I intend, I desire, I aim, I wish by the end of this newsletter that you would have some understanding of the key issue regarding the illusions of power. And what is that issue? Well, it's an issue of discernment. Quite simply, it's an issue of discrimination. In order to break the parameters of power, that is to say, the illusions of power, you need to discern that illusions of power are different from actual power itself. Now, in great, great measure, what is happening in the world today, what is happening on this planet, against the benefit of all living beings, and against the freedom and sovereignty of each and every human individual, is due, get this paradox, to the power of the illusions of power. The illusions of power are in themselves powerful, but they are just illusions. So, if you want to be free, and if you want to make a difference on this planet, right now, at the most critical moment in this kalpa, then you need to know what are the illusions of power by contrast to the true, verifiable reality of power. And what is the reality of power? Well, it's quite simple. In the conventional world, power is defined as being able to influence or control other people, and additionally, as being able to do whatever you want, you who have that power, regardless of the objections of other people or how it affects them. So, this is the reality of power, and the reality of power on this planet consists of four factors: lies, fear, money, and weapons. So, these are the tools of power, let's call them that. If you have any or all of these tools of power, or any combination, such as lies and money, weapons and money, fear and lies, fear and money, if you have any of these combinations, then you have the ability to control and influence others and do more or less what you choose to do, regardless of the objections and oppositions of others, because those tools of power are real. They are not illusions. So set those four tools aside. Lies, fear, money, and weapons. And let's consider that the illusions of power stand distinct from those four elements of what I would call real-world concrete power. For instance, if you have just money, then you have the power to buy things. You can buy, if you're a man, you can buy women. You can buy the use of their bodies. This is commonly and massively evident on this planet. If you have weapons, like jet planes, bombers, attack fighters, attack planes, then you can send them out to a country like Syria, and you can blow the hell out of a bunch of innocent people for whatever reason you want, giving whatever excuse you wish. And if you have lies and weapons, then you've really got a lot of power. And it's real power. by that definition, okay? So how would you then distinguish the tools of real power with their many applications from the illusions of power? I open with this question, and I invite you to consider this question as this newsletter unfolds. In making this little inventory, it's certainly essential to add a fifth factor, a fifth tool of power that is perhaps the most insidious and destructive tool of power, and that is secrecy. Lies and secrecy obviously make a fabulous marriage, because if you have lies, then you want to cover up those lies and use secrecy to do so. So secrecy is a tremendously dangerous element or tool in the arsenal of power. It's essential to know that arsenal, because in making a counterattack against the enemies of humanity, it's absolutely required to know the weapons and tools that the enemy deploys, that the enemy commands. Just would like to interject, before I proceed, a little snippet of GNE navigational intel. Today, as I stood on the terrace watching the sun go down here in Spain, I took some pictures of that sunset, which I'll post with this newsletter. And as I looked at the sky at that moment, I realized that today, when I'm recording this talk, that is to say the 18th of October, there was a lunar apogee with the moon at its point most distant from the Earth. At the moment of this event, the apogee is positioned in 22 degrees of the sign Leo, the astrological sign. That is to say, 142 degrees of ecliptic longitude, which places it in the constellation of the Lion. Now, those of you who follow the GNE will know that the event, one of the events in the celestial writing that signaled the end of reset and the entry into correction, was the passage of the lunar apogee into the Crab. That occurred in March of this year, 2014. As you will know, if you've studied the constellations on the ecliptic, the Crab is a diminutive constellation, only about 20 degrees in width, that is to say, celestial longitude. And so the apogee of the moon moved through that constellation in about 8 months. And as I speak to you right now, and as you receive this recording of my words in the final 2 weeks of October, bear in mind that the lunar apogee has shifted into the Lion. That is the signal for the release of the Kalika War Party. The Lion corresponds to Bhairavi, Balam, Sekhmet, and other ferocious lion-headed goddesses and Dakinis who are protectors of the Anthropos and the precious gift of life on this planet. I've been waiting. You may wonder what I've been waiting for. People wonder what takes me so long. I'm sure some people do. You may wonder what I've been waiting for. In this case, I was waiting for the lunar apogee to enter the Lion, and between the 18th of October and the 12th of November comes the announcement and activation of the Kalika War Party. You may recall that I said somewhere in the GNE briefings that the diamonds, that the Mahavidya Bhairavi, whose name means the terrible one, has no verbal or cognitive syntax in her instruction, that she teaches through action and situation rather than through instruction in language. However, I did once receive something like a one-line terma from Bhairavi. And the content of that terma was this, quote, "Freedom stands at the end of secrecy," unquote. Along with that one-line terma, I received a title of the terma, which was Taiga, T-A-I-G-A. Now, go look up what is Taiga, and you'll find that it has to do with the geological landmass of the Earth. Technically, it's called a biome, B-I-O-M-E, which might be pronounced biome. In any case, this biome of the Taiga comprises a great mass of Russia and Eurasia, as well as parts of Japan and Alaska. In fact, the Taiga comprises about 20% of the total landmass on this planet. Now, why would a one-line terma that goes like this, quote, "Freedom stands at the end of secrecy," end quote, be titled Taiga? Well, it occurred to me upon receiving this terma that Bhairavi might be communicating in an odd fashion by a metaphoric allusion between the landmass of 20% and what it takes to break secrecy. 20% is 1 of 5, 20 of 100, 200 of 1,000. And so, I would infer from this terma that if freedom stands at the end of secrecy, then those who stand on the Taiga would be 1 in every 5 people, or 20 in every 100, or 200 in every 1,000, and so forth. And I would infer from this calculation that that is what it takes. If 5 people are holding a secret, it takes 1 to break it. If 100 are holding a secret, it takes 20 to break it. If 1,000 are holding a secret, it takes 200 to break that secret. Consider that little formula, if you will, if you would enjoy considering it. It might just be an erratic concoction of my mind. Or, on the other hand, that calculation might contain an essential truth that we need to understand in the battle against one of the primary tools of power, secrecy. That is, a single person alone cannot break secrecy unless the secrecy is only held among 5 other people. But the greater the bonds of secrecy, the more people are needed to break that secrecy, and the proportion is 1 to 5, or 20%. Okay, so hold that thought for a moment, and let's move ahead to the second item of this newsletter, Illuminati planning. Now, there's a segue here, because there's a rumor going around the planet that the evil people who control the planet and use their power for their own selfish and nefarious purposes operate in secrecy. And one name attached to these people, the power elite, as they've been called, is the Illuminati. Now, I have to say that I don't entirely agree on many profiles of the Illuminati, but it certainly is a subject worth investigating. You need a lot of scrutiny and sobriety to do so. But I do think about the Illuminati from time to time. And I also consider, and I do, when I do that, I do it in consideration of this question. If and how the Sophianic message or Planetary Tantra is reaching the world at large? This is a question that concerns me. Now, you may have heard that some people claim that the Illuminati use astrological timing as well as numerological illusions and formulas in orchestrating their schemes of traumatic imprinting. And they do this somewhat in the manner of a serial killer who uses codes and leaves a trail of enigmatic signals and symbols and clues to entice not only those who are the targeted victims of the serial killer, but also to entice into a game those who would seek to track down the serial killer and to terminate his or her evil behavior, okay? So let's say there is a Joker slash serial killer motif, which is to use astrology and other numerological or perhaps Kabbalistic illusions to spread a trail of clues. And this is how the serial killer plays with its victim, and it plays with those who would seek to track it down and bring an end to its activities, okay? It plays with both. And this is how it amuses itself. And it's quite obvious that this serial killer type behavior may be used by the so-called Illuminati on the scale of world events, in realpolitik, in the global scheme of politics. It has been said, certain people have claimed, that there is plenty of evidence of this happening. So I would strongly advise you to read the little PDF found on the internet by Michael A. Hoffman II called Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, which is an excellent brief investigation of this theme. It's just a short book, easy to read. I was looking through it today. I could comment on it at length, but I won't let that commentary eat up the presentation of this newsletter. It's interesting to note, however, that he cites John Michel, who was a longtime friend and colleague of mine who died in 2009. I knew John Michel for like well over 25 years. I used to visit him often in his Notting Hill apartment when I was in the UK. And I was introduced to John Michel. Whoops, passive voice. The man who introduced me to John Michel was an eccentric British painter, an heir, you could say, to the dilettante and pre-Raphaelite tradition of European art, whose name was Maxwell Armfield. So, you might recall that the Russian Revolution was defined by a moment, something like 2:08 in the morning on a certain day in October, when the Bolsheviks took over the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg. Yuri Lina, in Under the Sign of the Scorpion, gives close attention to this date, as many others have done. Recently, one of my informants, my moles, buried deeply behind enemy lines here and there across the planet, sent me some extremely detailed information about the astrologer who advised the Bolsheviks. Now, back in the days of the Reagan era, the Reagan-Gorbachev era, many people in the United States knew that President Ronald Reagan had an advising astrologer, a friend of Nancy Reagan. I can't remember her name right now. And she played a hand in deciding the exact day and hour, or down to the minute, when Reagan would meet with Gorbachev for the talks that eventually resulted in the dissolution of the Soviet Union. So there is some evidence that world events, or the people who manipulate world events, and who act out these dramas in the public eye, do use astrological timing and perhaps also Kabbalistic or numerical formulas. I have yet to see a really in-depth, convincing study of any patterns that might be detected by noting the correlations between world events and the astrological configurations of that moment and so forth and so on. But there are a couple or a few outstanding examples, and you out there may have heard of more. Now, returning to the Illuminati for a moment, let's just say that the Illuminati is a label to put upon a secret cabal of people who have the tools of power in their hands and who use them, those tools, destructively upon this planet. I wonder if there would be a moment when the Gnostic intel of the Sophianic vision story and even the Gnostic intel of planetary tantra might extend into the realm of the Illuminati and might impact that realm or impact certain individuals in that realm. You know, are they observing me already? Well, that's obvious. But I'm talking about not just observing me, a relatively harmless character that I am, but I'm talking about some kind of impact into the world of the Illuminati from the world of the Gnostic Sophianic practice. And it just so happens that the other day I came across the following. So take a listen here for a second.
They feel it, they sense it, but they ignore it. So those true evil ones, the 10%, aren't restricted by anything. It's like the Kol Nidre prayer, which the Talmud has, and all hardcore Jews will recite the Kol Nidre once a year, and all that does is forgive them for everything that they are going to do by way of a transgression for the coming year. They get a get-out-of-jail-free ticket for the next year simply by reciting a prayer. So anyway, talk about a sociopathic approach to things. It's kind of reminding me of that.
Well, I would say that's salvationism as opposed to what the Gnostics were doing with
well said.
Society.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, one of my teachers right now in my growth in consciousness is of course, John Lamb Lash. He's one of my podcasts. I listen to his podcast a lot.
But John Lash, I met John, and I guess he still lives in Australia, doesn't he?
No, he's in Spain.
Spain, all right.
He's doing podcasts on the net, and interesting viewpoint. And the only religious figure that my father ever feared as a cultist was the goddess Kali. Actually had an argument with my mother as we were driving to the Church of Satan after the regular Presbyterian church one Sunday. And my mother saw the moon this one fall Sunday afternoon, and she talked to my father about the Dakini in the moon and said she wanted to study that. And my father looked at her and said, "No way you're going to get near that. That's Kali. She'll kill us."
Well, you don't say. You may recognize there the voice of Jeff Rentz in an interview with Jay Parker, which I have linked in the textual notes for this spoken part of the newsletter. It begins around minute 24 of the YouTube clip entitled "A Look into the Darkness," Jay Parker with Jeff Rentz. I don't know if any of you have heard of Jay Parker, but he's speaks as a survivor of a Satanist / Illuminati cult, and gives a lot of details and a lot of personal testimony coming from someone who lived in circles of power and influence, bad influence, coming from someone who knows firsthand what it is to live in a family of those who command those tools of power, fear, lies, money, weapons, and secrecy. So Jay has come out bravely to speak openly to the world of his experiences. And I want to give a nod of thanks to Jay for bringing up my name and the Gnostic message and even the Gnostic intel on the Dakinis and the lunar cycles on the Jeff Rentz program. Even though you'll see, if you listen a little further, if you listen to the end of that particular exchange, you'll see that Jeff Rentz more or less dismisses that material with a shrug and moves on to something else. Oh, and by the way, Jeff, if you're listening, I still don't live in Australia, and I'm still not beating my wife, and I'm still convinced that you never met me. So it's strikingly disingenuous of you to say that you did. Jeff Rentz certainly knows who John Lamb Lash is, not to be confused with John Lash, who lives in Australia, if there is such a person. Anyway, let's call it a near hit on the part of Jay Parker. And by the way, Jay, I want to tell you that I understand fully that anyone brought up in an insane world is going to go insane. And the recognition of that insanity is the first step toward healing it. So I support you and encourage you on that journey of healing. I assure you that the path of Gnostic wisdom and the Sophianic vision is the ultimate sanity and the ultimate path to healing. And I wish you well on that path. Now, right here at the half-hour mark of this newsletter comes the moment when normally the appropriate thing to say would be, I need to apologize. But I'm not really an apologetic type of guy. And in fact, I never apologize for being myself. You know, if I was at a restaurant and I walked past your table and carelessly knocked over a glass of wine, I would apologize. But I don't apologize for being myself. So I suppose the appropriate language here would be, I wish to object to myself. You know, it's certainly true that some people who listen to me object to things I say or to the way that I say them. But you know, I can also object to myself just as well as they can. So I have to take a moment to object to something that I said and the way that I said it. I'm referring to the conclusion of the last newsletter, number 2, when I brought in the subject of Vox City and how to demonstrate it. Now, I'd like to say that what I said in the concluding minutes of that talk remains true. I do intend to demonstrate Vox City, and I do believe, if you will, that the way that I demonstrate it, or the way that anyone would genuinely demonstrate it, would result in a fractal propagation of that power across the planet. Well, that's true, but I must object to my tone and my manner of presenting that matter in the last talk. You know, I don't really sound like that. I don't sound off that way when there are people around and when I have interaction, listeners, when I have other human animals for a sounding board. In fact, I can say extravagant and self-important things like that in a completely different manner, actually in a light and playful manner, rather than in a high-toned, presumptuous manner. So I ask you to understand that I tend to slide into that manner of expression due to the conditions of these newsletters. Some of you who followed the GNE might recall that I noted the awkwardness and difficulty I felt at times because I was simply recording the briefings in a room alone, if not for the presence of my two cats. Now here I am beginning this series of newsletters, and I'm in exactly the same situation. I don't really care for this situation, but there's nobody here, and so I have to speak, as it were, into the void. And it is this unfortunate condition of speaking into the void that causes me to slip into that rather harsh and overbearing tone, which sounds pompous to me. It sounds, arch, if I might use that term. It's an interesting adjective that you don't hear much anymore. Arch. Just overbearing and presumptuous, and it's really not necessary, and it detracts from the general tone of my message. So I wanted to object to that and yet assure you that I intend to do exactly what I said in those words. Now, while I'm on this riff, I'd like to say that I'm still finding my bearings with these newsletters, and it would help me enormously if you, the listeners, wrote in and told me what you would like to hear and how you would like me to undertake certain questions, topics, and issues, you know? So I call upon you to write me, and with your wishes and expectations, because I'm not entirely clear yet how to steer the newsletter. One thing I am certain of is this. With the newsletter, I'd like to expand the outreach of the Gnostic message beyond what it has been so far. I'd like to expand it beyond the loyal following of the GNE. You know, the GNE is over. The GNE was an experiment in monitoring the process of reset that unfolded from March of 2011 to March of 2014. So, by definition, the GNE was an observation of reset. Since the spring equinox of March 2014, correction is underway. I'm looking for a way to speak in correction that is appropriate to the fact that we are in correction, you see. And one thing I dearly wish to achieve is a broader outreach. So it doesn't matter if those who pick up these newsletters followed all of the briefings in the GNE. You can go back and listen to them anytime you like. If you didn't follow the GNE, it doesn't matter in regard to the material that I'm presenting now. And I am open to your proposals and suggestions as to what material I can treat, and even how I can treat it, you know, because style is a crucial issue for a Turton. It's a delivery issue. Okay, so that said, let's get on with the main topic of this newsletter, which concerns the illusions of power. So I want to restate my initial distinction. There are tools of power in this world used for evil purposes by evil people who follow an agenda of deceit, domination, division, manipulation, etc. And those tools could be considered as many and diverse. You could make a list, and it would be quite a list, quite an inventory. But for the purposes of what I'm saying right now, let's agree that the tools of power can be put into five categories: lies, fear, money, weapons, and secrecy. So I want to point out that if you're up against any of those tools in the hands of people of bad intention, spoilers, perpetrators, interspecies predators, then you're up against some really difficult shit. Because those tools of power are real. And if you don't have some way to match them, there isn't very much that you can do about them. None of us can. Those tools of power, for instance, money and weapons, are difficult to fight. And I'm sure that's no surprise to anyone, is it? If you just reflect on it a little bit, I think you'd probably agree that you're in a serious uphill battle at great disadvantage to take on any of those five tools. If you don't have something equivalent, how you can take on money with money, you can take on weapons with weapons. It's a good practice to be armed and to know how to use weapons for self-defense. Otherwise, you're dependent upon someone else to defend you in a situation where you might be assaulted. So, arming yourself is one way, on a small scale, to meet the problem of that tool of power. But you can't arm yourself with tanks and aircraft carriers and jet fighters, you see. So people who have those weapons have the upper hand. That's just simply a fact. And it's pretending to think otherwise. So don't pretend. Don't fall into the trap of pretending that these five weapons are not massively dangerous and difficult to overcome. Might, just a little side note here, or something that crossed my mind a few times, you might wonder why I didn't include sex in that inventory. Because sex can certainly be used as a weapon, and is used as a weapon. The sexual behavior of predators is a weapon against those upon whom they prey. For instance, pedophiles use sexuality as a weapon. And likewise, in many cases, women have power. Women wield power through sexuality, and they can use their sexual power as a weapon and destroy men. Many instances when this is done. Remember that power is defined in this case as the capacity to have control over others, to influence them to act, or to force them to act, or prevent them from acting. That's power. Power over others is what I'm talking about. And certainly, sexual power commanded by women is a formidable weapon on this planet. Causes an enormous amount of destruction, not only to the targets of the women who use it, but often to the women themselves. Now, so I would make sexuality a subcategory of weapon, although in and of itself it is, of course, not a weapon. So, where am I going with this? Well, I'm emphasizing the real and concrete nature of these tools, to impress upon your mind that these tools must be distinguished from illusions of power. Now, illusions of power, the subject of illusions of power, is highly paradoxical. To introduce it, I need to make a framing statement, which is itself a high paradox. And the framing statement goes like this. The illusions of power are dangerous because they are also, in their own way, powerful. So, when you face power and you want to take it on and overcome it, power that is being used in this way to do harm to you as an individual, to the world, to the web of life, when you face that challenge, you must know that power comes upon you, it confronts you in life from two distinct angles. The angle of the real and concrete tools of power and the angle of the illusions of power, which, although they are illusions, nonetheless are powerful in their own way. Now let's consider how that works. I'd like to give three examples of illusions of power and how they work. And in doing so, perhaps I can suggest how to break those illusions, how to break through those illusions. The first thing that needs to be understood here is how an illusion becomes lived out. In the past, I used to call this living a lie and making it work. And you can pretty much use lie and illusion as interchangeable terms here. Remember, however, that lies are a tool of power in the real and concrete sense. So lies really do double duty, because lies, as illusions, are also an instrument of power in what I'm going to call now the subjective sense. The tools are objective, the illusions of power are subjective. Nonetheless, they are extremely powerful, and people can be controlled by illusions. I'll give you three examples of that. The first one is the obvious example of authority, the illusion of authority. Now, when you look at the current situation in the world, you see that the American military is gone absolutely bonkers across the planet. There is almost no place in the world where the American military hasn't forced itself upon the people and interfered with people's ability just to peacefully coexist and pursue their own lives. And the American military, currently as I speak, is directing operations in Syria, among other places. It has covert and overt operations, okay? One of its overt operations, as I speak, in October of 2014, under the fog of war, is the deployment of jet fighters over Syria just to bomb the hell out of people and out of the country and out of towns and cities under the pretext of targeting ISIS terrorists, okay? Now, what does it take for that to happen? Well, I don't know. Lots of command and control logistics, right? But basically, it takes the hardware, the tools, the weapons, let's say an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf, and then it takes a jet plane loaded with bombs launched from the aircraft carrier over the target area, right? All that is real. That's no joke. That's not something that you can stop by merely exposing it. You can't stop these military operations by merely standing up and screaming to the world that they are fraudulent, that they are not being undertaken for the reasons said, and so forth and so on. That does nothing. Those who have the power to use these weapons use them unless they are physically stopped. And how are you going to physically stop them? Say you and I are going to rent a helicopter and we'll fly over the aircraft carrier and then we'll drop down on ropes as they show in dramatically in many films and we'll go hand on hand and take out the whole crew who is responsible for launching these jet fighters off these aircraft carriers. Well, this is not going to happen ever. And in many, many, many cases, in countless instances, in the battle underway, those who are fighting for the cause of humanity are not going to be able to take on the concrete tools of power. However, the implementation of those weapons, in this case I'm talking about those weapons, the implementation of those weapons can only occur because those who are involved in making it happen are caught in the illusions of power. So you can see that the illusions of power are necessary for the implementation of the cold, hard, real, concrete weapons of power. So I'm proposing to you a strategy to consider where and when you cannot do anything about the tools of power. You can do something about the illusions of power that make it possible for those tools to be used. So how would this occur in the first case? Well, it's crossed my mind a few times, and it may have crossed your mind as well, that the United States military wouldn't be able to do the things it does if there was a breakdown in the chain of command. This is normally called a military stand down. Well, what is a military stand down? Well, it is a way to break the illusion of power by breaking the chain of command. In fact, no one in the American military or any other military who receives an order to do something has to follow that order. But according to the code of the military system of control and command, they have to follow the order, or they will be punished for not following the order. So, control, how do you exert control? You exert it through the threat of force, including punishment, or through the application of force. That's the only way that you exert control, actually, directly, and physically. There are other ways to exert control upon others through the mind, through money, that's bribery, or depriving people of money is a big way to control them, through the lies, for instance, of the media, through secrecy, through getting people to do things that they don't know are intended for certain purposes, to get people to collude without knowing that they're colluding, and so forth. So you can see that in the case of all the five tools, there are different ways to control people. But in case of weapons, which I'm discussing right now, there is a complex system of control and command which depends on the people in that system being under the illusion of authority. And as soon as they break the illusion of authority and act from conscience and act against the law that compels them to collaborate in the use of these weapons, the system collapses. So the best chance, obviously, for a massive world-scale change in the horrific imperialistic depredations of the American military is a break in the illusion of power in the military structure of command. That is to say, a mutiny, a stand-down. A stand-down would not require mounting jet fighters against the jet fighters that are sent to fly over Syria, would it? It would just stop the jet fighters sent to Syria dead in their tracks. Everything would stop dead in its tracks. Why? Because the illusion of authority in the military command system would be defied and broken. That's one example. Let's turn to another example where the illusion of power operates. Let's say in advertising. Now, it's quite commonly known, and I don't just say this from a male or sexist point of view, that shapely and attractive women, women considered to be attractive by certain standards, often appear in ads for cars. So there's a new ad out now. I could, you know, cite thousands of these ads, but there just happens to be a new one out with Claudia Schiffer. So there's Claudia Schiffer, considered by some to be, you know, breathtaking, train-stopping, Aryan Nordic beauty. She's German. And she's in a car ad, right? There was a previous car ad with her, which suggested that she was driving around with no clothes on. But in this one, she's clothed. But still, she's a high-fashion model, or was. And there she is. And the illusion of power speaks to the human mind, speaks to the male customer, I suppose. Who knows? And maybe female customers in another way. And the illusion convinces them that if they buy the car, they will command the power to have that woman or someone like her. Now, that is an illusion, but the illusion works. As long as men, customers, believe in that illusion, they will be compelled and influenced to buy a car thinking that you get the girl with the car. So, if that illusion is broken, if the target of that illusion learns, you know, wakes up and realizes that buying the car is not going to deliver to you the woman, then you don't buy the car. You see what I mean? And the whole system breaks down. The whole system of advertising for the purpose of selling people what they neither want nor need breaks down because the illusion that supports it is broken. As far as I'm concerned, I think advertising is really, really hideous. And I would say, I would venture to say, that in a sane world, there would be no advertising. Advertising would not be allowed in a sane society. Let's say you wouldn't have to legislate it out of existence and make laws forbidding advertising. For instance, posters with, what's her face? Kate Moss. Advertising some French perfume, things like that. You wouldn't have to forbid them. They would be useless. They would be ineffective in a sane society. The way to advertise goods in a sane society would be to advertise the products on the internet or in catalogs or papers with simply a photograph of the product, not a faked photograph, just a photograph and a description of what's in the product. This is what advertising used to look like if you went to the Sears and Roebuck catalog at the beginning of the 20th century, right? That kind of advertising simply informs the public of products to be sold. But the use of fakery and acting and special effects and all that goes into advertising everything from toothpaste to the new model of the Lexus or the Toyota would be absent in a sane society. Obviously, that is not the case. Advertising costs countless millions of dollars, therefore it creates business, it creates jobs, and it garners countless millions of dollars. Therefore, it supports the tool of power that we call money. But if the illusions of advertising were dispelled, then advertising would become completely ineffective. You wouldn't have to dismantle the entire system of advertising. It would just become pointless and purposeless, and it would collapse. without the illusions that support it. I hope I'm getting my point across here. One of the objectives of the Calico War Party is, of course, to attack, quote, the system, unquote, from many different angles simultaneously. So one of the bands in the Calico War Party, which would be the Shodashi Band, would attack advertising. And there would be guerrilla warfare against advertising. So you can go against the tool of advertising by defacing posters. That would be one way of directly attacking the tool. But the Shodashi Band undertaking that role to attack advertising would do it in other ways as well, by deprogramming people from the influence of advertising, and by ridiculing it, and by educating people into the nature of mind control that can be seen operating through advertising. Advertising literally makes me nauseous. I can remember many times when I went to London and I would come up out of the train station, I would come out of Waterloo or maybe some underground, what do they call it, the tube, maybe some tube station when I used to take the tube. And typically you come out and there's a newspaper stand and you see 50 or 80 magazines facing out, glossy magazines. And I would get ill just standing in the presence of these, because I realized that I was in a toxic environment that is fed by the people who buy into those illusions. Those magazines wouldn't be there with those covers, with those glossy covers, often selling sex or cars or things like that, or food. They wouldn't even be there if some human beings did not submit to the illusion of power that operates through advertising. Finally, we'll take the third example, and what was that going to be? Let's see. Okay, yeah, of course, that's an easy shot. Talking about religion here. Yeah, one of my favorite topics, as you know. That would fall into the category of lies. The lies of religion are, of course, a monumental tool of power and control on this planet. And I have argued and will argue until my last breath that the lies of the three Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, have brought horror and destruction into the human world. And those salvationist religions actually operate like a plague across this planet, an ideological virus, if you will. And Hinduism, Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism are not much better. They come up as a close second, and I haven't had time to get around to them until now, but I'm coming around to them as I have hinted in some previous talks lately. But before I talk about the illusions of religion, just want to reinforce the point that I'm making. This talk is a general orientation with the purpose of increasing sobriety and steadiness. We are in a war. Humanity is in a war to save itself from extremely nefarious and evil manipulative forces, some of which derive from off-planet. Okay? In order to face this war soberly and steadily, everyone needs to know that the power that does harm operates on you the power that intends harm or destruction of your life and of life itself, operates upon you from two angles. The objective angle, working upon you through those five tools, and the subjective angle, which works within you and through you by the effect or influence of these illusions. Now, I want to emphasize in coming around to the conclusion of this talk that the illusions seem real, and they seem so real that there, in many cases, people cannot distinguish the illusion they are living from reality. And this is a very widespread syndrome in human experience. Let me give you an example. I happen to know of someone who lived in the illusion that she had the perfect family. And well, it turned out that there was evidence to the contrary over time. But nonetheless, she continued to believe and pretend and lie to herself. And so she continued to maintain the status of living that illusion. And people can live illusions in the face of the most blatant contradictory evidence. They will continue to live that illusion. I don't think I'm talking about something that you haven't encountered. And it would be really brave, and it would be, what shall I say, it is always enlightening to see how you yourself are living in illusion. Because the lesson to be drawn from that is profound. When you break through that illusion that you have a perfect family, or that you are a true patriot, or that you are, you know, a true Christian, the illusion that you are a true Christian comes from the operation of one of those weapons, the lie. And as long as you're in the illusion of being a true Christian, you can't fight the institution of Christianity and everything that it entails, from the satanic pedophilia of the Catholic Church all the way down the line. You see, the objective tools and instruments of control for evil purposes depend for their implementation upon these subjective illusions. Break the illusion, and half the battle, or more than half the battle, is already won. That's the point I'm trying to get across in this present talk. So finally, to conclude, while it's almost too obvious, it's almost, you know, I've argued and discussed this topic in countless ways over the last 15 years. One of the purposes of Gnostic Intel is to expose the lies and illusions of religion. One of the primary illusions of religion is that there is a male creator God who at one moment spoke to a man, a designated messenger, a designated intermediary, such as Muhammad or Jesus or Moses, and dictated to that man the rules that humanity must obey in order to win the approval of the Creator God. The belief that human animals living on Earth in this divine experiment of the Aeon Sophia derive morality and the rules to live by from an off-planet authority is tremendously powerful belief. It's an illusion. And yet, millions and millions of people live in this illusion. You know, when you see the photographs, the aerial photographs of the Hajj pilgrimage of the Muslim world, It's extraordinary to see literally millions of men circulating around the Kaaba in Mecca. Millions. The aerial photo looks down. Millions of them. And all of those men are under the illusion that the rules by which they live their life don't come from their own conscience, as if they had one, but they come by dictation from a paternal father god off-planet who uses a bearded male intermediary to get his message to the world. That's an illusion. Now, you break that illusion person by person, one person at a time. You break that illusion individually, and it's the only way that illusions are broken, is individually. And then the institution of that religion and all of its material and physical mechanisms of coercion and control immediately collapse. So the real power to overcome the power of evil resides in each individual. And it is true that, let's say, a single individual in the U.S. Army or in the Air Force cannot single-handedly take on the material weapons that are commanded by the U.S. military. Obviously not. But a single individual who breaks the chain of command, the chain of authority, which is an illusion, can contribute to bringing down that entire system. Now, this is a way to think about how not merely to speak truth to power, but to counterattack against the power used to harm, deceive, and destroy all that is good and beautiful in this world. So I'm kind of preaching in a way, I guess. I'm kind of speaking as a moralist here, okay? But I'm a Gaian moralist. And I would have to present the framework of Gaian ethics to go deeper into the foundations of this battle, this counterattack. So once again, here in the newsletter, I'm alluding to the subject of the Calico War Party. But bear in mind, as I said before, the war party, when it appears, when the fog of war dissipates in the beginning of November, will not principally be presented on this site. Obviously, I've got the KWP on my mind. I mean, you know, it's a big responsibility to put this out. And putting it out, well, it's certain to change things in my life enormously. And so I'm, you know, this is an intense and suspenseful moment for the main turn. And I want to say that even though you're not here with me in flesh and blood in this room, you are in some deeper sense, in some other sense, equally deep with me. If you are in planetary tantra, and if you are devoted to the Sophianic message, and its time has come, I'm convinced that the time for that message to impact the world has come. I take that little incident involving Jay Parker as an example. It's a small incident, but would you agree with me that it has some really, really enormous implications? Of course, Jay Parker is no longer in the company of the Illuminati. He escaped. He's a survivor. But nevertheless, his testimony shows that the Gnostic message is reaching into that world and impacting that world. Now, I can assure you that what I have to say, tactically and strategically speaking, as leader of the central band of the Calico War Party, well, it's not going to be theoretical, my friends. And I wouldn't presume to ask for your attention in those matters if I wasn't certain of the high impact that can occur, the high impact of the counterattack, including both magical and non-magical strategies. So right now, I'm sorting out my tools. I'm sorting out my own mind. And as you can perhaps tell, I kind of toggle back and forth between the Calico War Party and this newsletter. So in concluding, I ask you once again to consider what you would like me to cover in the newsletter. I want to define the topic territory so that it suits you, serves you, and answers to your questions and your needs. Also, I want to do that in a way that broadens the scope of outreach of the Sophianic message. So, I look forward to the moment when the party is launched, and then I can more effectively divide my activities between the party itself and the ongoing presentation and development and elaboration of the Gnostic message and the Gnostic intel for our time. So my course is set in that direction, and anything you can say, any comment you can provide to steady me, now it's the Nav, the Nahual, who's asking you to steady him, will be hugely appreciated.